Hello, everyone, and welcome to our ACG Comedy Podcast. I'm Yara Sarkis. I'm a first-year GI fellow at Cooper University Hospital. I serve in the ACG Woman Comedy, and I will be moderating this session today. I'm here today with the amazing Dr. Falt. For those who don't know her, she's an assistant professor of gastroenterology and hepatology at UMass Medical School. She's the DEI executive for the Department of Medicine. She's an MD graduate of Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. Did her IM residency at U of Chicago and her GI Hepatology Fellowship at University of Washington. She also completed a Clinical Medical Ethics Fellowship at the University of Chicago. We are very, very thrilled to have her here today to discuss pregnancy and GI, navigating the obstacles and balancing work and motherhood. Thank you so much for agreeing to be part of this podcast today. I met you the first time at DDW and I was just amazed by you. So I'm happy to have you here and do this podcast with you.
You're so kind. That was such a generous introduction. Thank you so much. I'm really glad that you're focusing the podcast on this really important topic, and I'm excited to talk with you today.
So I'll get started and just start with an overview of maternity leaves and policy, especially for trainee and GI provider in general, in academic and private settings, if you're able to, you know, give comments on that.
Absolutely. So in general, we know that, and there has been a lot of advocacy for parental leave from medical societies in general, which there is a large evidence base supporting the importance of parental leave. And so medical societies have actually been in the forefront in terms of advocating for policies for parental leave in general. And then there's just this difficult disconnect between what societies say is evidence-based and best practice and then what's actually available for physicians. And so we do know that there is a long way to go towards us living up to our own recommendations in terms of adequate parental leave. And I think your question about trainees is an important one because a significant portion of gastroenterologists have their first child during training. And so it's an important thing to consider. In terms of what we're actually doing for trainees. So for overall policies, we know that there was the ACG Women's Committee previously did a fantastic survey of practicing gastroenterologists, and a third of practicing gastroenterologists said that their employer had no parental leave policy. So that is a pretty significant percentage who don't even have a parental leave policy. And then we know that the duration of leave taken by people is quite short. So there was I conducted a survey of hepatologists through ASLD. The average woman took 7.5 weeks of paid leave and the average man took 1.7 weeks. And given that, you know, medical societies are recommending that the evidence supports 12 weeks of leave as a minimum, we certainly have a far way to go. For trainees specifically, until fairly recently, until 2022, there were actually policies limiting the duration of leave that people could take. And then there was a really big change in ACGME that now mandates a minimum of 6 weeks of paid parental leave and opens the door for longer leave. So my hope is that this will start to improve and that we can have more widespread policies for both trainees and attendings in supporting adequate leave.
That's awesome. You know, 6 weeks is still a short time, but it's better than the 2 or 4 weeks that we had before. You know, when we have 6 weeks off in training, do you think that will impact or not? Like, what does the evidence show about impacting our training in general if you just take 6 weeks off or 12 weeks off or whatever for pregnancy?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I will say that I'm not a fan of limiting leave duration to 6 weeks. I think 12 weeks is sort of a minimum. You know, the data show just physical recovery from leave alone. So even if you completely leave out the fact that there is now a baby who requires parents to care for it for its survival, just the physical recovery from birth alone for the birthing parent, 6 weeks for a vaginal delivery and 8 weeks for a C-section. From the OB literature. So 6 weeks is a true bare minimum. You know, I could go into details, but you are still very much physically recovering from birth at 6 weeks, let alone the fact that you have an infant who is not sleeping and requiring around the clock care, incredibly time intensive. And it's an important time for bonding. And so that I personally think that people should be able to take 12 weeks. I have no concerns that someone could take a full 12 weeks and still be a competent trainee. One of the solutions that I think is important to move towards is the difference between a time-based education and a competency-based education. So when we graduate gastroenterology fellows, what we are trying to say is not this person has completed X number of months of training. What we're trying to say is that this person is someone who I would feel comfortable taking care of my family and friends. Like that's what, you know, as someone who works in an academic center, when I'm thinking of the fellows that I'm involved in training, that's my goal. And so I think having a adequate duration of leave, you can absolutely achieve that within a 3-year GI fellowship and still be able to take that leave. I think it just gets on, you know, thinking through what are we utilizing training time as? Is training time truly focused on education? Can we make it as high yield and efficient in terms of educating fellows? Or is training time more about service? And so when we hear people talk about like paying back call and fitting an extra overnight call and extra, you know, things before and after leave, those are more conversations about service. And so that's sort of a separate conversation from the competency question. Can a fellow take 12 weeks of leave and graduate competent? Absolutely.
That's great to know. And so, you know, in general, having a baby and being pregnant is very challenging if you're a provider, if you're professional already, or if you're in training. But I particularly think that training is an extra, you know, like add an extra layer to that. So what are the challenges that a trainee face? And I can think of a few, you know, night calls, scoping while you're pregnant. I know some of my attending had to like scope sitting down because they couldn't stand at the end of their, like in the 8 months or whatever. So in your experience or based on the data, what are the challenges that the trainee face?
I will say just off there are challenges that all pregnant gastroenterologists face. I will say off the bat that one particular challenge that a trainee faces and why I feel really passionate about protecting trainees is that trainees are in a vulnerable position. You have worked so hard for such a long time to be able to go towards this career. And as you know, getting into gastroenterology fellowship is incredibly competitive. And so when people are internal medicine residents and they're still waiting for their fellowship acceptance, or when people are fellows and they're still waiting for their opportunity to have a first job, these are transition times that will require, you know, their attendings to say glowing things about them and, you know, require like a certain level of support from their program for this career that they've worked so hard for. And so trainees are in particular really high risk for not wanting to ask for accommodations or not wanting to ask for, you know, to be seen as asking for anything because they're so worried about the potential bias. And that worry is not unfounded. It is well documented in the literature, and you can talk to almost any gastroenterologist who has been pregnant, that there is very real bias that people will face. And so people are not wrong for being worried about that bias. And so I think that is a particular challenge of training, is that you face that risk. You're at this really vulnerable career moment where you're relying heavily on supervisors for your next step. The other sort of like physical challenges certainly are present in trainees, also present if you have your child as an attending. So, you know, overnight call in the surgical literature, overnight calls are actually associated with increased risk of pregnancy complications. And I found that in my study of hepatologists as well, when I looked at overnight call burden and self-reported pregnancy complications, there was an association. There are certain, as you mentioned, like ergonomic issues for scoping. And then there's concerns about if people have pregnancy loss, like being able to take bereavement time. Trainees also have, you know, less financial resources typically. And so there's concern about fertility treatments or needing to pay for adoption. And so those can be quite expensive. And again, getting the time protected for both pregnancy appointments and things like fertility appointments, which are often difficult to predict, can be challenging as a trainee. And so that, you know, it's why we should have really transparent leave policies. We know that it is one of the ACGME requirements that programs during their interview process are supposed to present people with their parental leave policy so that trainees aren't in the awkward position of having to ask during their interview. And we did a survey of GI fellows that saw that 12% of trainees were actually presented with this information. So certainly we have room to go for improving things for trainees.
Thanks so much for talking about that. My next question would be, what can a program do to support the pregnant trainees or in general their pregnant GI attending? Is there anything specifically they should do or, you know, aim towards to help make it a better environment?
Absolutely. So I've talked to several programs, and actually there's an article that's coming out about this hopefully soon one program describing their sort of specific approach that I'm working with the lead authors on, and I think it'll be a great description of sort of how from a programmatic approach you can really standardize these things, because I think from a training perspective, standardization is incredibly important. You never want, for all of the bias reasons that we discussed earlier, for trainees to feel like they're asking for something or they're asking for something extra. They shouldn't have to advocate for things. There are certain things that are standard. And so my recommendation would be to have very clear policies that say, as soon as you as soon as you feel comfortable telling us that, you know, you're planning to have a child, you will get X amount of leave, that, you know, there isn't going to be a negotiation of how much do you really need and how much do you want to take. Like, you will have X amount of paid leave. Of course, if you want adjustments to that, then talk with us. But this is going to happen automatically. In your third trimester of pregnancy, we're going to limit the amount of inpatient service you have. In your third trimester of pregnancy, we're going to limit the amount of overnight and 24-hour calls that you have. We're going to make sure that when you come back, that you have time blocked for pumping, you know, that your clinic visits and in your scoping days, that there will be spots blocked off for pumping. And we're going to have those blocked off for a year. And then if you decide that you choose not to pump, or that, you know, you want to stop early, great. It's always easier to add patients than it is to take them away. These sorts of things, there are certain things that are systematic that you know will happen. There's a really great GME leader at where I trained at the University of Washington, who sort of has this like standardized handbook that she has available for the program. So you can sort of go through each one, and it is a guide for the program leadership to ask their trainee. So I think introducing that sort of standardization is incredibly important.
Is there a way we could get this booklet? Is where we're going to find it?
Yes. Yeah. So, we tried, if this is bringing up my guilt, we tried to publish it. We submitted it to several different journals and haven't been successful yet. So I do need to revisit that project. I'll give credit to her. Her name is Jennifer Best. Dr. Best is a real champion for these efforts. To plug another project, there is a paper that I worked with several fantastic faculty on that was published in Gastro and CGH on this sort of topic of how to create a systematic implementation for parental leave policies and for family-friendly work environments, that sort of goes through a step-by-step process of the different things to think through as well. And although that's more specific to GI, Dr. Best's work is specific to trainees. And yeah, hopefully more will be coming out in this space.
Yeah, we'll be looking forward to looking article, you know, probably it's published.
Yeah, absolutely.
Standardized, you know.
Absolutely, because it's understandable, especially, you know, in people who are in smaller programs or in people who have, you know, the vast majority of GI training programs are run by people who are dedicated to training. They care about their trainees very deeply. They want them to be able to take as much time as possible, but they are, you know, facing a lot of significant challenges of, you know, staffing with a limited pool of trainees, and, you know, concerns about ensuring competence, wanting to make sure they're following ACGME requirements. And so I do think that having these things as spelled out as clearly of, you know, great, your trainee has just told you that they are expecting, and here are the things, like, as a checklist that you can do, it's helpful for training programs as well. There was a great study after ACGME came up with its new policy, you know, mandating parental leave. There was a study that surveyed program directors and found that a huge percentage of program directors were actually unaware or were misapplying the new policy, just because the language can be confusing. It can be confusing how it fits in with board eligibility requirements. And so more clarity in this area would definitely be helpful.
Yeah, I agree. Especially that we're all physicians, right? We like to follow the rules in a book.
Exactly. We're rule followers.
We are. So you talked a little bit about coming back after pregnancy to work in GI and to train in GI, and you talked a little bit about pumping. Is there any other things that you think should be in place, either between colleagues or between yourself and your attending when you come back? Because, you know, leaving your baby at home is hard. Coming back and getting, you know, accustomed again to just do everything again and do your calls, do your procedure is going to be hard. So yeah, anything extra that you would like to add?
Absolutely. So I will say, absolutely, the actual difficulty with returning from leave in terms of pumping, it's incredibly challenging. So making sure that you have sort of a good setup. For me, having mobile pumps, the ones that didn't attach to the wall, that was a game changer. That was the difference between my first and second child. And I found the ability to sort of like pump everywhere and like, you know, like walk and pump. That was essential. So anything that they're expensive, they're at least $500. And so anything that programs can do to support their trainees, whether it's allowing you to use academic funds towards that or having other funds that support trainees in getting that as sort of an essential work equipment would be great. And I'm also a big fan, like the early days are incredibly challenging. You're still sleep deprived. There are a lot of care needs at home. And so I do think that having a reasonable reintroduction is really important. I'm not a fan of the payback policies. I mean, if someone, you know, breaks their leg and needs to have surgery, people aren't usually saying, well, when are you going to pay me back? Like, it's just sort of presumed. I think pregnancy is often viewed more negatively because it's viewed as sort of like a choice. And so it's like, okay, well, now you have to pay back. And so I think that having someone who has a newborn at home and asking them to do extra call on top of that, I think you should do whatever you can to minimize burden on their colleagues, but also not ask the person to come back and then do a lot extra. And then I'm a big fan of flexible work scheduling. I mean, no one, you know, can know what their desires will be, you know, as a parent until they sort of have their child. And having pathways that allow flexible work scheduling for periods of time are incredibly important. And so, you know, this is being advocated for sort of like across different specialties in medicine, as we're seeing, especially in the post-COVID area, a big shift. Like, there are a lot of people leaving clinical medicine, and particularly a lot of women leaving clinical medicine because of these sort of inflexible and rigid hours. And we have huge issues with availability of clinicians. And so I think offering different work pathways of saying, you know, you can work part-time, you can, you know, there are certain things that are more challenging, like it's hard to adjust endoscopy start times, but allowing some part-time or job share models, that's beneficial for parents. And data show that a lot of caregiving responsibilities are on women, so it's particularly beneficial for women. And I will also say that it can be helpful for other people as well. Like a lot of things, that when you advocate for one group, you're often helping other groups. So we have in GI a large community of physicians who are more senior. They're, you know, thinking about retiring, but might still enjoy working, enjoy contributing, but might say, you know, I don't want to work 70 hours a week anymore, but I also I don't feel that I need to retire yet. And so advocating for flexible work scheduling so that the woman whose child is, you know, under two can choose to work a part-time schedule, and the man who's 65 can choose to work a part-time schedule, and the people, you know, who are sort of in the middle and they are able to, you know, work longer hours, they can choose to do that as well. I think creating these sort of schedules will be beneficial.
Yeah, it's great to hear that. And I mean, in the last few years, we did see a small trend towards flexibility and more flexibility, you know, in training and in just work in general, which is a good thing. So hopefully we'll just continue to go forward with that. And then just want to touch a little bit about the physical health about pregnant GI physicians in general, especially in regards to exposure, heavy lifting, you know, having to wear the lead, having to hold a scope, being exposed to contrast radiation. Do you know anything about that? And, you know, what is the data on that?
Yeah. So certainly, I mean, number one, we were just talking about this in our fellowship lectures where someone was giving a lecture on ergonomics and said, I don't know anyone who wears compression socks. And I was like, every pregnant woman should be wearing compression socks. And I kept wearing compression socks after pregnancy. I'll just start with a generic plug on compression stockings because they're the best. I will also say that people should be able to, this is similar to the flexible work scheduling, you should be able to adjust things to what works for you. So if you're pregnant and, you know, you want to shorten your endoscopy day, it is really short-sighted for an employer to say, you know, someone who's 34 weeks pregnant, oh, if I shorten your procedure day by 3 scopes, then, you know, that's not fair. Because how many pregnancies is someone going to have in their life? How many times are they going to be in their third trimester and asking for that accommodation? It's a pretty limited time period. And to allow someone to feel valued, to allow them to feel that their physical health is being supported, to give them longevity and support their ergonomics during a time that's, you know, really challenging, I think that's incredibly important. I do remember when I was scoping as a very pregnant fellow with a attending, and he was showing me how, you know, when you have a loop in and you're trying to do, you know, a complex polypectomy, and he said, oh, I pin the scope with my hip against the bed so that I have both hands free to do that. And I just sort of like look at him, and rather than turn and use my hip, I just like push my giant belly into the scope, and I can use my, I used my now son to just pin the scope. And he was like, oh yeah, that's handy. So yeah, there are definitely physical differences. And so I think, you know, making sure that people that have the support that they need to sort of get through that. Your question on radiation and like the fluoroscopy exposure is a really good one. I think it's dependent on personal comfort. I saw a study that was unpublished and that the authors were trying to publish. I hope it gets published soon, or maybe it's already been published and I'm just not aware. But I know a fantastic group of advanced endoscopists did a study where they personally wore those patches that can detect how much radiation they were getting under their lead, and they wore them, you know, to sort of test safety in pregnancy. And their data suggested that it was quite safe. And so they felt comfortable. And of course, wanted to put this out there so that other people didn't pursue it, as it didn't perceive that deciding to pursue advanced endoscopy would be out of line with also desire to sort of bear children. And so I think having more data in that space on fluoroscopy would be helpful. There are some reassuring data from other medical specialties as well, with IR. And I think there's some studies that are already out there that show that lead does provide good protection. But I also think it's every person's comfort. If someone says that they don't want to be part of those procedures while they are pregnant, and then that should be respected, because everyone is going to have sort of a different comfort level. I, as someone who was not going into advanced endoscopy, I opted out of doing fluoroscopy procedures when I was in the end of my pregnancy. And I'm very grateful that was quite respected.
Awesome. Thank you so much for talking about that. So, I mean, I think to finish up and just have one more question, and it's very hard to answer that question, I guess, but I don't know. I'll just put it out there. Do you think there's an ideal time to have kids in our GI career? Because, you know, I'm a fellow now, you know, and we started thinking family planning and all those things. So when's the best time? Is there any way a best time?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's such a hard question. It's an individual question. And it's also a question that I think is so personal and depends on so many personal factors. I will say that, like, my secret superpower is knowing when people are going to have a baby before they're, like, you know, program or institution too, because people reach out to me at conferences, which I love. Always feel free to reach out to me. These sort of plannings and, like, hearing through your specific career decisions and your family situation and your goals, I'm always happy to discuss that. And I think many people are. And so talking to mentors about, you know, these are my timeline factors, these are, you know, the situational factors, it's a very specific and personal decision. My first piece of advice is always you should try for family planning when you're ready to be a parent, and sort of remove that from medical training, because I think there's definitely advice that is persistent about, like, you know, the times that are best, you know, when you're a chief resident, when you're a third year GI fellow, et cetera, about, like, which is great if it worked. The data from the ACG study done by the prior women's committee, which was fantastic, did show that a significant portion of physicians are delaying pregnancy. And then there are high rates of infertility. So I think the majority of respondents in the ACG study had their first kid between 30 to 34. And that's for kid number one. So if you choose to have more than one kid, there's a significant fertility decline at 35. It doesn't mean you can't have kids after 35, but just I think that if you feel ready to have a child earlier and your main concern is, you know, will I be a bad GI fellow, or, like, will I, then I would just say you will never regret having a kid. If you speak to anyone who has a kid, like, it is quite universally described as, like, you know, the most important part of their life. And so I would say whenever you are ready to have a kid and you feel you have this sort of situational supports, then I would go for it. It's not going to be something you regret. But always feel free if you have, like, specific questions about, like, I want to do this fellowship, or I'm worried about this location, or, you know, X child care issue, then reach out to people who have been in similar situations and are happy to talk.
Well, awesome. Thank you. Any additional comments, advice before we wrap up this session?
No, I'm really grateful that people are thinking about this and talking about this. We have such amazing leaders in the field. I think it's amazing that it's something that is getting a lot of attention, and there are such incredible people working in this space. I mean, the group of colleagues working on things like parental leave and pay equity and the societal involvement, I think, is really inspiring. It's a really great time to be a parent in GI and a woman in GI. And that's not to say that there are not very real challenges to overcome regarding workforce shortages, patient access to care issues that make some of these issues challenging. But that's why planning ahead and having well thought out solutions ahead of time is so important. And so I'm grateful that the podcast is focusing on this.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Feld. It was great talking to you today. And I think I learned a lot. And I think everyone who's going to listen to that podcast is going to learn a lot as well. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much. You too. Thank you.